Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to another Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring. I'm the eponymous hero of the piece, and my guest this week is Chris Addison, who loves to break cupboards and eat stinky cheese and be generally evil. It seems nice, but it's just a front. My new DVD, Happy Now, is out just in time for Christmas. Go www.gofasterstripe.com. It's the perfect gift for someone who's an idiot and likes me. If they need cheering up, you can go, are you happy now? Give them that. Or if they're happy, go, you're happy now, they'll go, yes, that'll probably be nicer because they might not be cheered up by my DVD. Also, I'm on tour with a show called The Best. It's mainly touring between February and May 2017, but I'm in Bridgewater on December the 8th. So if you live in Bridgewater, put your gas masks on because it smells there, doesn't it? I know the chemical plant's closed down. But it still smells, and I'm sorry to tell you, this probably isn't the best way of getting you to come. And come and see me at the Bridgewater Arts Centre on 8th of December. Anyway, it's Chris Addison now. Let's find out his secrets. It's been very exciting on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's realised one thing he can't say. It's opprobrium. That's the word he can't. Opprobrium. That's the word he doesn't know how to say. Opprobrium. You know what I mean? Opprobrium. It's Richard Herring! That's what I can't say, opprobrium. I can't say that. That's what I always get wrong. So welcome to another in the series of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Teddy Ruxpin the other day. Do you remember the... talking Teddy, wasn't he? She's got a stage where I go on the internet and look up cool things from the 1980s and see what comes up. He calls it Real Estepa. So it's, that's what he calls it. So again, thank you very much to the Kickstarter people who've kept this going. We've got Dean Rutland in the audience there. He's, wow, he's got a fan club with him. They've had their champagne already and they're fucking loaded. Look at that, it's fantastic. He is, he's paid to be, get VIP seats. He'll be asking Chris Addison a question later on. If I forget, just to shout out, say, Rich, in a really serious speaker. Richard, why won't you ask my question? But I won't forget. Have you drunk all the champagne? Is it all gone?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, knocked it back between the four of you. Have you become good friends, you four? You've hung around from last week, so you must be having a good time.
That bottle of champagne lasted a long time. The person who wants to be insulted for money this week, I mean, I can't believe this is true, but apparently their name is Malte Helmert. Which is just like, it's an open goal, isn't it? That's M-A-L-T-E-H-E-L-M-E-R-T. Malte Helmert. That can't be real. What I love is people... forgive me, Malte Helmert, if you are a real person who's just from another country and you don't know that your name means just smegma. But I don't think you are real. It's like, I think that's CJ from Eggheads pretending to be called Malte Helmert. He's got lots of nom de plumes. He is very he's got a great imagination. Bloody hell. Let's see who's in the audience. There's a lot of people with beards last week. I should have done it this way around as well. That's the mistake I made last... Oh, for fuck's sake. Yes, it's going. There's Andy McKechie, helps me. When I've got technical difficulties here... What does it... E-America, what does that mean, E-America?
I don't know. Just TK Maxx.
Okay. E-America. They're what?
They make
trainers. They're not. They can't spell America. No. That's why they're cheap trainers. That's that beardy man from... He knows everything. He's the font of all knowledge. It's all in his beard. That beard's like Wikipedia. So there's a man here in a nice baseball cap. Inside, you enjoying it? Yeah. Are you well? Because I don't want to, you know, if you're wearing that... You look quite healthy, so I'm just checking. That's all right. It's worth just checking. You're just a bit bored. Yeah, that's all right. That's normal. What do you do for a living? And what's your name, I should say?
Steve,
that's nice. What's that accent? I'm a bit of a Henry Higgins with accents. Just say a couple of words.
American.
You're American. Are you American, though? That's what I want to know. Yeah, it's... And I can tell you where... Do you come from somewhere around the edge of America? Yes. So I'm Henry Higgins. New York? Yeah, it says New York, he said. Where are you from?
LA.
That's close, isn't it? It's close. You could barely be closer. What brings you to the UK? You've just come from LA to see... Are you a big film producer coming to get me in a Christopher Guest movie, maybe?
Yeah,
brilliant, that's good. What do you do for a living? You work in TV? Andy, I'm going to just have to start doing it properly now. Okay? Because this is a big thing. This is my big opportunity. What TV shows have you made?
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, you're impressed by the production values of Rich James' Square Theatre podcast. That's brilliant. Oh, well, thank you for coming to the show. Did you know what you were coming to see?
Yes.
Bloody hell. Is it because of Chris Addison?
No.
Oh, bless. Well, it's because of me. That's it. The show's over, Chris. Go home. Go on. I'm just going to do, like, some monologues and stuff. Just for a picture for you of my days. Well, love to meet you, Steve. That's very nice. I won't be rude to you then. We'll crack straight on with the show, because this is a fantastic guest. It's his second appearance. He's best known for being on Richard Ames' Leicester Square Theatre podcast. He was on the first ever videoed episode of this. It's down to him. We people wanted to see his face. He's probably actually best known for being a man who can be seen in the audience for the TV taping of Are You Dave Gorman in 2003. And genuinely, that is on his Wikipedia page. I'm not even joking. Someone has put that into his Wikipedia page. He's done a fuck of a lot of stuff. And they've said he can be seen in the audience for the TV taping of Are You Dave Gorman in 2003. Go and check it out. And no one's taken that out. It's Chris Addison, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Addison. TV's Chris Addison. Welcome. There's a microphone there. Sorry, there's lots of rubbish in the way.
Yeah, somebody emailed me about that last week.
What the hell is that?
Is that you? That is you. Please tell me. It's really freaking me out. Is that you?
Right. So they emailed you, and then they went, yeah, you went yes, and they went right,
no,
straight
reply.
To Wikipedia.
I didn't reply, but occasionally people say, I've just seen Are You Dave Gorman? That's you, isn't it? And I'm thinking, how are you watching Are You Dave Gorman? Has that gone on Netflix now?
Maybe. It was a good show. What do you remember about being in the audience of Are You Dave
Gorman?
Great.
It was really good. And,
do you remember which Dave Gormans were on it that week?
I think the Dave Gorman was on it.
Was he on it?
And there were 50-odd other ones. I was there for... I went to a couple of the recordings, actually. Yeah. Yeah, and I think I went to the last one where all the Dave Gormans turned
out. Oh, wow.
So I saw all of the Dave Gormans. Blimey. Which was, you know, and not many people can say that, really, can they? Wikipedia, what people put on your Wikipedia page is brilliant. For ages, somebody had put on my page... he is a very keen beekeeper and has 5 times attempted and failed to become president of the British Apiarists Association. Which I thought was such an elegant piece of vandalism. I don't look at it. Somebody told me about this. And I thought, let it be there. And let it just exist. And I kept getting asked about it in interviews. Because what happens is that somebody from, you know, journalists just look at Wikipedia, that's all they do. So they put, they just put it in their story. And so that's the second source corroborating Wikipedia. So all other journalists have 2 sources now and they can... James Martin brought it up live on Saturday Kitchen. I had to go, that's not real. And it's like an entire section of their programme just fallen...
But you should try.
I saw about it. There's a bit of me going, maybe I'll get into beekeeping.
No, give it a go. No. Have you got a garden?
Be me and Vince Cable.
Yeah. Yeah, you could get some bees in there.
Yeah, I could totally get some bees, but I have small children, so it's probably not a good idea.
What is more important, the faces of your children or having
or
some
honey?
Free honey.
Yeah. Free waxy honey. all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, it's touch and go.
You've got a couple of kids, so you know, you could lose one to bee stings.
My daughter got stung for the first time the other day. Yeah, by a wasp on the ear.
Oh,
believe it, and it's taken days and days and days, and it's still there. And now she's used to it, so I can get the bees.
She's immune now. Do you remember the first time? This is a good question.
Do I remember the
first
time?
Do you remember the first time you were stung by a striped insect?
Yes, I do, actually. Yeah. I must have been under 4.
Hold on, I've got to write it down.
What is this, 201?
Yeah.
201?
Have you
numbered them? You've not numbered them, you idiot.
They're on my computer, it's on my
shelf. Oh, fine. That's not a computer, that's a notebook.
I think you've gone into the Apple shop and just paid £500 for whatever's on the table. Somebody's left that notebook.
Yes, I must have been under 4 because we were in the first house I ever lived in. I was in a paddling pool and it stung me on the belly. And I can remember just the sheer incomprehension.
Yeah.
Why the? I mean, you don't know the word at that point, but some deep part of your brain is finding the childish equivalent of why the fuck is that happening?
Yeah, it's a sharp pain, isn't it?
It's an incredibly sharp pain.
I got one like that caught under, I've got a quarter B between there and then as I move my arm and then it stung.
Oh, no, that's not good.
No, it hurt.
Yeah.
Good question, but it's going to just be the same answer. Yeah, I do remember it fucking hurt.
I got stung 2 weeks. It's been a very waspy year this year.
Has it?
Hasn't it? Do you think? Do you have no opinion on this? You all live in a fucking flat in Bermondsey. You don't know.
We live in London.
It's been a really waspy year. But I found wasps hanging around, like... Because I thought wasps basically hung around bins. Like, they're the tramps of the insect world. You just see them around bins. But they hang around the grass, which I have to mow, and so I'm constantly disturbing these wasps, and they sting me whilst I'm doing the grass.
That's your
that
punishment.
Is modern life.
That's your punishment for having a garden big enough to mow.
I got a fly mow, so I go around with the fly mow up like that, and fucker. And I worry about taking the bin off the back because they're going to fly out and attack.
It's probably your fault that bees are dying out.
I leave bees alone.
Well, it's hard to tell in that blind rage of panic.
Yeah, that is
when
true.
When you see them buzzing around.
That is true. But I sort of imagine that bees are apologetic about it somehow. A bit English. Sorry. I'm so sorry. It's just what we do.
So it's about 3 years since you were
last
here.
Have you been?
I've been all right. You are now nearly the same age as I was when I last interviewed you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, well,
how's that working out for you?
It's fine. Yeah. Absolutely.
How are your testicles now? Because we talked for quite some time about testicles.
I mean, I think they're fine.
I warned you about what was going to happen within 3 years to your testicles.
Maybe what you should do is, you know how with your kids you have little pencil marks on the door? So you get tattooists just to do your ages down your leg. 78.
And maybe an artist's impression of the...
Did we? Did we come to any conclusions about what could be done about that?
No, I don't. I think just...
That would be a thing to go on Dragon's Den with. I've got an aging ball hammock.
It's a hammock.
Some kind of hammock would work. What would you pitch
well,
it to?
Well, I wear pants, so that generally does the trick. I find that they have a sort of inbuilt hammockish mechanism.
I suppose they do.
Per se.
Yeah. I don't wear pants.
You don't wear pants, no.
I just let it all...
This is body paint.
Might do it one.
That's an absolutely amazing thing to do. Isn't it? Men can't get away with body painting in quite the same way, particularly sort of in that jean area. Wait, what? Those are very tight, aren't they? Especially if your balls, if you've got your mid-40s balls kind of swinging like a grandfather's pendulum just above you. Just
well,
above
you
your knees.
We'll come back. I think you should come back every 3 years.
And we see, we can measure my balls.
And when it happens...
Okay. I should, yeah. I'll come on with, like, I'll have a white, like, a line on the... I'll draw a line on this pair. I'll keep these jeans.
Okay.
And then I'll we'll keep them as a record.
Good luck.
It'll be lovely. It'll be great, that. And, you know, they'll be like, sort of like the kind of experiment that Darwin would have done over time. You know, those gentlemen scientists of the Victorian era who spent 20 years looking at worms in their garden for, you know... For posterity. So that's what we will go down in history as some kind of medical researchers.
Yeah, it would be good.
This is good. How your testicles changed from the age of 44.
So
sign up. We'll need a control.
They're not going with it.
So maybe a woman could do it because that's not going to change. That would be proper control.
Yeah.
I don't really understand science.
Do women have... I don't know. I think women might have testicles. I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Because Donald Trump grabs their pussies, which suggests that the pussies are external in some way to be able to grab
them. I don't know if he knows what that means.
No, I don't know if he... Mm. I don't know if... To me, it sounds like someone who tends a lot of time grabbing male genitalia, because you can do that.
Yeah.
So he's kind of going, yeah, that's what I do. I love grabbing pussies.
Yeah. I get all three bits.
Yeah, got them all. I hold on to them. It's quite hard to... You know, they're quite... To grab it...
Yeah. I mean, he's an old man. He's worked. He's probably worked a technique out.
Maybe yes.
He seems to have had a lot of practice of a sexual assault.
Well, he might be the president of the United States, as you say that, and there may be a drone heading for your garden.
Yeah, but it's probably just Amazon delivering more ball hammocks. On Prime, quick next day ball hammock delivery. That's how Prime gets you, isn't it?
Is it true? This is something you have claimed, and I don't think it's true.
I've claimed it.
Do you have the ability to tell if a trampoline is correct to the correct tensile strength?
When did I claim that?
You claimed that.
When did I?
You claimed that in an interview. I can't remember. I think with the Daily Mail.
That feels
they
like...
They said, what's your special ability? And you said, I have the ability to tell trampoline.
That sounds like a man just going, that's a fucking stupid question. Here's a fucking stupid answer.
And then you said something about being able to tell, you know, you need to get it right, because if you get it wrong, your children end up in the next garden.
I mean, thought that it was. Like on your feet, that seems like a reasonable response to a very dull question.
It's a good thing to come up with.
I don't know. Have you ever tried to put up a trampoline?
No.
Have you ever tried to do it on your own? You can't do them on your own. You need two people, because there comes a point where you're going with the last spring, and you realise that all that time you spent laughing at the world's strongest man on Boxing Day, you need one of them now.
Sounds like you do know a lot about trampolines.
Yeah, I know enough. I've got a trampoline. Oh yeah, I've got a trampoline.
Tell me the story you were. Lots of people were putting...
Enclosed.
When Doctor Who was changing last time, lots of people put money on you becoming the new Doctor Who.
Yes, they did. That's true.
You were quite high. The odds were quite big. And people were saying... And, like, people were putting three-figure sums on you
did
being
you?
Doctor Who. I didn't put any money on it.
That was... So that came about because when the Doctor... When there's going to be a new Doctor on Doctor Who, there is an absolute vacuum of information. They lock everything down. And even... And the person who is going to... Who is cast is not allowed to tell anyone. So Peter didn't tell his daughter.
Right.
I think he only told his wife. And his daughter was going... His daughter was saying, oh, they're talking about all these people. Why aren't they talking about you? You could be the Doctor. And he already knew. But there's a total vacuum, and so because there's a total vacuum of information, any nugget of information gets blown out of all proportion. And my very funny friend Jeff Lloyd, who is on Absolute Radio, who I've known for 25 years, and is a hilarious man.
If you listen to the last podcast, did a terrible fart at the Sliding Doors.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he was meant to. Yes, he did. He did an awful fart at the Sliding Doors premiere. Yeah, so those are the two things you need to know about Jeff. Very funny on Absolute Radio, and did an awful fart.
Yeah.
But he also he's quite good mates with Paloma Faith, and he persuaded her to put on her Twitter, "Friend at Cardiff says Chris Addison's the next Doctor Who. Wow. Leave it up for 5 minutes and then delete it." But of course, people are going, "Huh? Oh, and she's deleted it! That must mean it's true." And so the bookies went lunatic and put me in that thing. To the point where when the news came out about Pete being cast, he contacted me going, "I'm really sorry, I know your name was in the frame." So I had to tell him.
Imagine if it had worked, though. The producers of Doctor Who might went, "Oh, fuck, Paloma Faith has said it."
Yeah.
We better make it. We got it wrong. We got it wrong on this form. Scratch that name off.
It was one of the blokes from the thick of it. We got the wrong one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And turn on, and there's Justin Edwards. So that's what happened there. There was no real chance of my actually being that. But they're just so desperate. They need any piece of information.
But you were. You have been on Doctor Who, though.
I have been on Doctor
Three
Who.
Three times.
Three times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read 25% of an audio book. Well, okay. So I'm in the family now.
Did you just get bored and then say I can't be bothered
doing this? Get something else. I read three of the 12 Doctors of Christmas.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, 4, 8, and 12. It was fantastic to do that. It was a shame not to get to do a scene with Peter.
Yes,
but I did get to work with Michelle Gomez, who is phenomenal and who I just loved from Green Wing on, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just excellent just to hang around with her.
Is that, well, I mean, you've done the last 2 or 3 years, you've done some quite astonishing things. So you're already so was that like an ambition? Was it kind of exciting to be on Doctor Who? Were you a fan of it when you were a kid? And
I loved it when I was a kid. It's like my agent rang me up and went, "You need to sit down now." And I went, "Okay." And he said, "Doctor Who have offered you a part." And it was ridiculous, because I'm a huge fan of it. I really loved what Russell T. Davis and then subsequently Stephen Moffat did with it when they brought it back. I thought that was really smart and clever. And so just to be there was something else. And it was really exciting. So I turned up. The first thing I did was I turned up for a wardrobe fitting and a table read. Table read is, I'm sure you know, but for those who don't, table read is when everybody in the cast and the producer sort of sit around and you read the thing, you read the script out. Everyone who's playing the parts reads the script out, so you can get a sense of what it's like, and that allows people to rewrite and all of this stuff. And so I just went down to Cardiff for that. I wasn't shooting anything. And I was in this trailer and I heard this, "Where is he?" And Peter came in the full thing. He was in, like, he was in the full Doctor thing. And then he hauled me out and sat me in the TARDIS. I mean, it was just amazing. But I'm going to just wait there. And I was just in a canvas chair in the TARDIS watching him and Jenna doing a scene above me going, "This is fucking surreal." And if I had told my 10-year-old, 12-year-old self that was happening, I would have gone out of my mind. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Did you get to travel in time in the TARDIS?
Well, so we shot for about 6 hours, and when we came out, it was 6 hours later. So it really does work.
Yeah. Exciting. So I've got some new emergency questions I'd like to try out on you.
Great.
Well, then. My favourite new emergency question is, if you had to do a human centipede with two other people and you are in the middle, you know what a human centipede is, Chris?
Have you seen the human centipede? So I'm ingesting. What am I?
Yeah, you're in the middle, so your mouth has been stitched to the anus of your. But you can choose. I'm nicer than the guy in the film. You can choose the other people.
So I have to choose whose shit to swallow.
Yeah, and then. But who
so your question is, whose shit would you swallow?
Yeah, well, okay. Whose shit would you be most prepared to swallow?
I just think the
And then, but then your. Then your combination of their shit and your shit will go into the mouth of the person behind you. So that's a little treat to make up.
I honestly think the biomechanics of this haven't entirely been thought through.
Right.
Because, like, what about the gag reflex? Is it not going to go,
Doesn't matter, does it? You gag and then it can't go back up the anus very far, can it? And if it does, it'll just slip back down again. So then you'll be swallowing your own. I think you'd learn not to swallow your own sick.
But how do you swallow? Because you're presumably. I think it's difficult to swallow.
Well, it's
with your
difficult
mouth open.
to not swallow if your mouth is full of their shit of whoever this person is.
I just
people
think,
seem I'm, very
also where's my nose,
to answer this
right?
Question.
So how much oxygen can
well,
I get?
I mean,
in?
Your nose must be. I don't. You know, Andy is in the nose is in the human centipede. You
where's
made.
The nose?
Do you can make sure the nose?
How can
is,
they breathe though? Where's that? I mean, because if
well,
you're,
up you're there, you've got like a little gap.
No, you haven't.
You've got no, the cleft of the anus is
which
there.
Which is holding their nostrils no. shut, presumably.
You could do it just
unless,
above.
So people,
it's
so
that. That's their anus cleft, and then that's, and then you breathing in probably something.
But you can't to, breathe in also, because if the esophagus is
that's why you've got to get swallowing, man. That's why you've got no... Plus, you have the benefit of going, this is unpleasant, but it's not as bad as what's happening. What's going to happen in 10 minutes?
So it's all like being in a traffic queue. Yeah. I'm fucking annoyed about the traffic queue, but at least we didn't turn up a minute later.
Yeah.
I would think probably the Queen and Prince Philip.
It's the obvious answer.
Yeah. At least because you'd have, one of them would probably die, and then you know they've.
What happened?
Well, actually, I think Philip would really just last. He's leather, isn't he?
Well, he was meant to die when I used to have a routine
what?
About. He was meant. Him and Nelson Mandela were in hospital at the same time, and I had a joke about God had an excellent opportunity to show us whether racism was right or wrong. and I was
uh-oh.
Hoping... And God didn't come out of it very well, because
no.
he killed Nelson Mandela and has let Prince Philip live for another 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, he, I mean, they are
he's
incredible, the
royals. He's indestructible.
Royal. Yeah, they live for a long time.
So I think, he could, I think he could survive on a diet, presuming
shit.
It's the bottom of your and the Queen's shit. I think he could get enough. I mean, the Queen has a very... nutrient-rich diet. I'm sure a lot of those nutrients must come through shit.
I think the other thing
she
is that those are people who would be missed.
Yeah.
So there'd be a search. you know, there are, they'd be among the most missed people. Because,
yeah.
you know, if you went for, I don't know, if you said, if you picked a rock star, people go, oh, it's just a lost weekend, there's no point looking for him. Mm. But if the Queen and Prince Philip were kidnapped and surgically attached to a human centipede, there would definitely be, the police would definitely get called.
Yeah. And they've probably got some kind of homing device inside their skin.
I would imagine they've been chipped at the vets.
Yeah.
The royal family have probably all been chipped. Yeah. I bet Harry was chipped when he went out to Afghanistan. Because, you know, what if he got kidnapped? You'd need to know where he was, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Hey?
It's interesting. What happens, though, Andy? You're my human centipede expert. So, like,
why is he? Does he breed
them? Because he's seen... I think he probably does them, but he's seen two of the three films. So that's, for me, is... That's
you've
someone
seen
who's
two of the three
yeah,
films.
Yeah, he's interested enough
so
to
after watch. One film, you went, oh, well, you know, that wasn't appalling. Then you went back. But
yeah.
after two, you went, no, I mean, this idea has run
yeah.
its course. It's getting silly now. Yeah, come on.
In the films, does
that
the,
was
do
very
people...
far-fetched, that thing they did, and that second thing about a chain of people being sewn together.
Do the lower people start dying?
Yeah.
So someone, the middle one dies maybe, and the other two are still alive, or the end one dies.
Well, how does the...
But the one at the top, presumably the front one, the Queen, or Gemma Chan in my case... is not going to die from this. It's going to be inconvenient, but they'll just be dragging around the corpse. Eventually, the corpses of the other two will rot away and fall off, and she'll be free to defecate as per normal. So the first person doesn't die, presumably.
You can't remember.
You're not much of an expert, are you, on the human centipede? I could Google it now, and we could all watch it, and then we'd know.
I don't think that trying to bring to bear the rules of reality on it is necessarily the best use of your time.
I am sure the producers of that film felt very different.
Have really thought of the logic of the world.
Yeah.
They were quite rigorous.
I think it's quite interesting if you're going to do it. I mean, at least...
Do it properly.
Do it properly. I think if they were any good as writers, they would have at least done a dry run of it with a couple
yeah.
of...
That would have been a hell of a table read, wouldn't it? Why are the chairs all behind each other?
I think that's a good... Here's a good question. Have you ever lived in an igloo?
No.
No.
I mean, it isn't a good question.
Because if you have...
It's a binary answer.
If I have, you've hit
gold. No,
yeah.
No question.
Okay.
But the likelihood of anybody that you are going to interview,
yeah.
it's not...
No, I think it's a good question.
Very few... I mean, do people live in igloos now? Is that a thing?
That is racist.
No, it really isn't.
What is the most impressive celebrity that ever came to visit your school?
and give a talk. The most impressive celebrity you ever get to visit my school.
Like either give a talk or whatever.
I have a feeling that James Anderton, the chief constable of Greater Manchester, do you remember
who hated
him?
The people with AIDS? Who
yeah,
AIDS
who,
with,
yeah,
with
and
the
who,
sewer.
And who believed that voices from God were directing his police work.
Yeah.
I think he came and gave us a talk.
Yes. Did he convince you of his... Was he allowed to... spout those views, or did he just talk about the police work?
I think he kept a lid on the views.
Yeah. He had an impressive beard. You guys
had a very impressive. He had a very impressive beard. He would only take nighttime speaking arrangements because he had to begin with evening all. It's a religious thing for the police. Yeah, but I don't remember anything about what he said except that was...
That's quite exciting.
It's cool. Yeah. Dead now.
He is dead.
Mm.
Good.
Well, I mean, it's a fair bet. At this point in 2016, anyone you mention is dead.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if Prince Philip dies between this and it going out, we'll probably have to drop that
I
bit.
I really like Philip.
Do you?
I'll be sorry when he goes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
No.
Why? He's great. He's a genuinely funny person. Like, he's funny. But imagine being in his position, because he's an uber alpha male who essentially has been in for the last... Where are we? Like, I don't know. How long have they been married? 70 years?
Has had to
put all of that stuff in a box and follow the Queen around, which is not in his sort of wiring. And so I think just every so often his personality just goes out of the box. And I quite like those moments. When he turned 90, there was a real sort of outpouring of affection. There's loads of amazing stories. I've told this story on stage, but it is great. This guy said... He said, I met Prince Philip twice. He said, once in the 60s and once again in the 80s. He said, in the 60s, I was out driving at night in London. He said, it was very late at night. And in the 60s, not many cars in London, not like it is now, particularly not, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. So I was driving through central London, Victoria sort of area, and that got cut up by a Mini, right? Really cut me off. And I was fucking furious. He said, he stopped at a light and I drew up next to him and I wound the window down. What the fuck are you doing? He said, there was a massive guy in the passenger seat who wound the window down. And Prince Philip leaned across this guy, went, pulled the V's at him and drove off. He said, and I met him again at a party in the 80s and I told him that story and he said, sounds like me. He's great.
Have you seen the website Dirty Britcom Confessions, Chris Addison? You don't ever Google yourself. Is that true?
Never Google yourself.
I've Googled you.
Daughter Madness.
There's some great
stuff on
Rich.
Well, just keep it to yourself, hey, love? Yeah, no, don't Google yourself. That's craziness.
I Google myself. I'm on top of it.
I don't know that, but I've not Googled, so I've not seen that website.
Dirty Britcom Confessions is where people anonymously give their sexual fantasies about comedians, British comedians usually.
Do they leave contact numbers?
No, they don't, it's anonymous,
well,
so you can never
really
follow this
through. Thought through.
There's an interesting...
Because there are a lot of British comedians who would absolutely phone them up off the back of that.
This is one. I wonder what Chris Addison's hand would feel like sneaking into my knickers as we sat at the Mock the Week desks together.
Illegal. Feel illegal.
Could be. I mean,
great.
It might be, that might be Russell
Was
Howard.
Was that Hugh? Did Hugh write
yeah.
Dennis. H. Dennis Hastings.
But there's a lot. People are obsessed with your hands. That's the
my
sexy
hands.
Thing about your hands. Someone else says,
my sort of
Chris Addison,
hands.
Chris Addison's hands, oh my fucking God, he can finger me any day. Any day you want, Chris.
There must be some days where it's not convenient. However much you feel that that's something you would enjoy, there must be some days when you think, no, today
it's not. If you turned up and they were at their parents' funeral, both their parents had died together.
I've got to give the eulogy. Listen, I'm on a clock here. There's a meter out there. I've run out of change, and I don't want to do the ring and go thing because it takes 45 minutes. I'll hide under the pulpit, like at the end of Police Academy.
Did we ever attempt to finger anyone under the desks at Mock the Week? Did that ever cross
well,
your mind?
Well, I always sat next to Hugh, so it never came up
as an attractive
thing.
Man.
Well, Milton was always on the other side of him, so I couldn't reach around.
Can we see your hands to see
They're long. They're long fingers.
Do you want to compare to mine? Because I have an average size hand. I have the size sand of a noose. You've got the hands of a giant there, Chris.
Yeah, I do, yeah, yeah.
I've got very small... No one wants me to finger them on the British comedy. What do you think?
You should get some of those, you know, those magic trick fake fingers in your thumb that you can pull off. And just post a picture after each one of those comments. Just send a picture of yourself and they're going, "What about now, ladies?"
I want to. Have you ever seen? You won't have done because you don't Google yourself.
I don't Google myself.
But this is kind of interesting. This isn't nasty. This is the YouGov profiles of.
Wait, what? Somebody polled. Pulled me.
I had it up on here, so I'm going to start again. Hold on. And it keeps on going off. It's a demographic of your fans. We talked about this.
Wow, is that a thing?
Yeah, so this is what your fan looks like. He's listening to headphones.
Right. No, that's just a picture of me. That just says the only person who likes Chris is Chris.
He looks quite young. In fact, he is quite young. What he likes is your fan enjoys his lifestyle, is his favourite dish, is pizza al quattro formaggio. That's the favourite dish.
What that is, that's somebody... Oh, al quattro formaggio, not quattro stagione. Interesting. Yeah. A cheese eater.
The second favourite dish of your fan... is edamame beans. The third favourite dish is cinnamon swirl.
Well, at least he's getting some fibre there in between the masses of carbs that seem to make up the main... No, that's possibly why my audiences are quite unresponsive.
Yeah.
Is the sheer amount of carbohydrates. I thought I was just a bit shit, but it turns out they've all had deep pan and a lot of cheese.
They like writing, they like Scrabble, and they like pub quizzes. That's pretty
right,
bang
that's
on.
That's you.
Yeah, I like all those things.
Entirely described you so far, actually.
They like Formula One and track cycling.
No. Oh, track cycling, yes, okay. 100%. Formula One, no, that's for idiots.
And their most likely pet is a cat. That is true of me.
One in two, isn't it? Is there somebody the most likely pet is a serval? What?
Here's some things that your fans think. I think newspapers should encourage debate and challenge perspectives.
Well, I don't think they should encourage debate and that all comment sections should be closed, surely. I don't think comment sections are doing any good to anyone, including the commenters.
I would not be able to manage without the internet, your fan says.
Nobody would be able to manage without the internet. That's where we are. That's why the UN talks about it as a basic human right now, because that's where we've got to.
Now, the thing about your fans, they have a very low...
pain threshold.
No, there's a very low... they have very little disposable income. They're quite left-wing.
Oh, that would explain a lot.
They have £125 to £499 a monthly spare.
What?
That's not too bad.
Oh, that's terrible if I'm going to have to... I mean, in terms of pricing my tickets, not good news for Chrissy.
But there is some... They shop at Sainsbury's.
Fair enough, yeah.
That's where I got the champagne.
But they avoid Taste the Difference. Because they're on a budget.
Their favourite celebrity is Andy Parsons.
Okay, but am I not their favourite? So, like, my fans don't even like me best. This is really
their favourite film is Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Not even the wrong trousers. They like that. They like the were-rabbit better.
Well, I think they want something that's feature-length. That's okay, their fair thing. Well, that's a great film. With an absolutely packed full of brilliant jokes and performances.
Their favourite TV show is Mock the Week. So that's
their favourite TV show is Mock the Week? Yeah, I can understand why that would be.
Okay, so there's a disparity between all of the supermarket stuff. So their top websites... visited include Waitrose.com.
Is that just stare through the window like Victorian children? Look at the things they can't have. And look how much plumper their edamame beans are.
And the magazines they read is Tesco Real Food.
YouGov, you're shit.
There's a picture of him reading Tesco Real Food and The Guardian.
So that's who I have.
Your fan watches TV for less than 1 hour per week. Yeah, his TV shows watched recently are Mock the Week, Only Connect, The Last Leg Out of Ten Cats Go to Scandams, Have I Got Been More News for You?
I like that Only Connect is the second one there. Only Connect, or as I call it, Here Come the Virgins.
What do you think, Peter?
No, I don't know. Oh, bless.
Do you want to see some of mine before we move on?
Yes, I really do. What constitutes watching TV now?
Well, I don't know. But mine's,
I watch?
Mine's what, less than 1 hour a week, and the favourite...
One hour a week?
What are they doing? It says the recently...
Masturbating to the foods in Tesco Real Food. Look at that ready-made lasagna.
Look who my fan... Look, that's my fan. That's not...
Hello.
It's Andrew Collins.
It is Andrew Collins.
My fans...
It's Andrew Collins with a big Kindle.
My most likely pet is a bird, so take that.
Wow, your guys are left field, man.
This is the things he thinks. Hold on.
This is great. This is the kind of rabbit hole that I could easily go down.
I want to get a screen, I think, now for this show. I'm going to try and get
that.
Yeah, because it is a bit shit for all those people who've paid that money, isn't it? I
mean, we're having a great time, but those poor bastards, it's not really working for
them. My fans watch TV less than 1 hour per week. TV shows watched recently, Glastonbury 2015. That's the first one.
I like the idea they were watching this year's Glastonbury and went, no, it's just not got it, has it? Something's missing. Darling, get the VHS.
Now, my fans' favourite celebrity is Stuart Lee, and their favourite TV show is Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle.
Oh, that could not be better. It's like YouGov has been set up for 15 years just to get to that punchline. The whole thing is a massive troll of you. Because he...
But my fans have £1,000 or more a month to spare.
Yep, and thanks, they're guys, spending it all on Stuart Lee DVDs.
Look how far to the left my fans are.
They're Corbyn Easters, aren't they? They're slightly worried that Corbyn's a bit soft beyond. On them.
Which I think, if I'm right, if I remember rightly, I did this before, I looked up Karl Marx. Let's see if this... I'll do this live.
Who are his fans? What's their favourite show? Read it. Oh, fuck, he will.
Karl Marx has got the same fan as yours. Oh, they're slightly more to the left.
But they're only... Here's what's worrying me, is they're all men.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's put in Dawn French, who will be a guest in future. And see if it's a lady. It's exciting, isn't it? Are you enjoying this?
Men look at websites. This is why .com is
it's that lady. It's a nice lady. Looks a bit like Helen Daniels from Neighbours.
She does. She's in the power. She's a bit Theresa May, actually. She's power suit, hair's kicked out.
Well, that was fun for us. So,
I feel so much better informed and yet sadder.
It's weird, isn't it? But I think the thing someone told me, I think maybe even Ben Goldacre told me, that is worked based on the things that people say different to other people. So when it comes up those ridiculous things, it's not actually their favourite thing. It's just that your fans... Quattro Formaggio pizza is the thing that they say that nobody else says.
It sort of doesn't reflect my experience of my audiences, who are like from quite young to exceptionally old. I find like a real range of people come and see my shows. So that seems a very. And there's people who are definitely Mock the Week people, and there's people who are definitely Thick of It people.
Yeah.
And there's a few people who've been there for 15 years who are Radio 4 people. And stuff.
Well, I've got people I think who've been there for 30 years who are like, so there's some really who are maybe 10 years older than me now really old, because I'm really old. And and then there's some youngsters come from the podcast, that little lad there.
That stuff can send you mad. You've got to, it's fun, but it can send you mad.
Yeah, no, it's true. But are you still doing stand-up?
I haven't for ages. It's really because I just haven't had the opportunity. And the other thing is that because it's hard, isn't it? When I come and do things like this, I think, that's what I want to do. I want to be there on stage and talking to people. And but actually, stand-up itself is a muscle that needs proper work. And even if you're gigging regularly and you've not gigged for a week and you go on stage, you can feel it, can't you? You go, fuck me, I'm a bit rusty here. So if you haven't done it for quite a while, you do need to sort of work quite hard to get to a point that you're happy with. So it's not like I can phone somebody up and go, do you know what, I don't want to come down tonight and do 15 minutes or whatever. But I do wish I was in that position.
Yeah. But you are very busy. So you've been doing, in the last 3 years, you were doing Veep, I think, last time we talked to you.
I must have been,
But you've obviously been directing quite a lot of that, and now you've stopped directing, that's finished.
Yeah, I'm done with Armando. Yeah, so I sort of stayed on for an extra year. After Armando left, I stayed on. HBO and Julia asked me if and a couple of the other Brits, if we would stay on and sort of, for continuity, really.
Sure.
So to sort of help Dave Mandel and his team get the style and all of that. But they, ducks to water. It's easy for them.
Yeah.
So they can, and they're filming season 6 now. But it felt sort of like, it was very strange when it when it shifted, because we used to film it in Baltimore and it was all the Thick of It gang and all, you know, and the actors were all away as well, so we were all on sort of sitcom camp together. And then they moved it all to LA for season five once Arm left, and I was the only one away, and I was going out of my mind with that. I was just in a hotel on my own, which was kind of crazy, and away from my family and stuff. So it just sort of felt like, you know, Dave has earned the right. I mean, he won an Emmy for it, so, you know, he's absolutely earned the right to just take that show on himself. And I don't really want to be the ghost at the feast, and I don't want to be away from my family.
No, so. I mean, that's the way. I mean, it's obviously Armando, who we've had on, was saying similar things. It must be so difficult. I mean, if I'm away for 4 nights in touring the country, and I'm in Manchester or whatever, it's very difficult to be away.
Yeah.
So it must be difficult to be in another country.
Last year was brutal. Last autumn. Because I directed four of the first five of season five.
Yeah.
And so I was away for 3.5 months, which is the longest we've ever done. And the schedule always slips, and you always end up later. And there was a point, I'd been away for maybe, I don't know, probably over 2 months at that point. Got to go home for like 6 days, and then there was only 10 more days that I had to do.
Yeah.
And we all thought, oh, this is going to be a piece of piss. This is going to be, because now we're basically through it now. We've done the hard yards. I just have to do these 10 days. But those 10 days were the hardest. Yeah. Just for some reason, I think it's, you know, you go home and you think, oh, I'm here. And I've got young kids. So yeah. it's really hard. It's hard for them as well. And they're quite used to it. And they're pretty resilient, because kids are. But it's not good.
So will you do more? I mean, there must be more offers coming in. You've won. Yeah. You've been nominated for director of Emmys. Did you win the?
I didn't win the Emmy. I won the Director's Guild Award.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's great. I mean, you know, just being nominated is pretty extraordinary. So there are other things that I'm planning to do, and some of them will sort of take me out to America. But also, you know, if I do episodes of other sitcoms, it's a different thing. I can just go prep for a week, shoot for a week, come home, and that's much more manageable to do sort of one episode at a time. Or if there are bigger projects, then those bigger projects are ones that I'm sort of, I don't know, then I'm kind of more heavily involved in it as well, and there's a better reason to go away for a length of time. But also, you know, now you can, what we used to do in the first four seasons of Veep, as Arm was telling you, know, it was all written here, we edited it all here, so we were really only in Baltimore. It was a few months, but we were only there for the shoot in America. And, you know, it's not like that now. That shows, but you can do that with, you know, you can make anything over Skype. Yeah. And down ISDN lines and so on. You can edit in another country from the person that you're editing with. In fact, we used to do that on Veep. So we used to edit our shows in Goldcrest Studios, which is in Soho, and we had a link to our production offices in Baltimore, so that when we were sort of in the middle of a season, you could actually, there's a room in our production offices with a sofa and a big telly. You walk in and you go, hello. And suddenly there would be the editor saying, hello, from Goldcrest. And, you know, like a TV that size would just perfect pictures, real-time editing. It was extraordinary, sort of 3,000 miles apart. So what you can do now at a distance means that, and cheaply, means that, you know, it's possible to do it.
More
of it from here.
It's amazing. I was talking to Will Smith, was on last week.
Well,
a couple of weeks ago. I get confused, but it also came along with one of the writers of Veep. So we were talking about, but in America they take it so much more seriously, and there's proper money for everyone.
And so
you know, like, we were talking about the fact that writers in the UK are almost the lowest commodity. I sort of think the writer is, without the writer you've got nothing. In the
absolutely.
UK we're treated like the writer is the most insignificant person.
Definitely.
You go to America and the writer, there's a lot of writers, but they're all treated extremely well.
The interesting thing is, it seems that there is a difference between film and TV. So in TV the writer is kind of king. In that respect, you know, when you hear of showrunners, when you hear, you know, Armando or Vince Gilligan for Breaking Bad, or, you know, any of those people, Dave Chase from The Sopranos, whatever, those people, or, you know, Shonda Rhimes, those are the people who They're writers at heart, those people that are running those shows. And the writers have a very exalted position. And, you know, when people talk about the success of a show, they talk about its writing. And it's only lately, actually, especially in drama terms, that people have started to talk about the direction of TV shows, because it's become much more cinematic. Things like True Detective and The Night Of are really good examples. Game of Thrones, some extraordinary things happen on Game of Thrones from kind of a directing point of view. But people don't really talk about that stuff so much in TV. In film, you only ever hear, you know, this film is a whoever, somebody film, and somebody is the director, and they may not have written any of it. The writer is incredibly lowly. In that, even somebody who's really well thought of, like Charlie Kaufman. I mean, maybe it's different if you're Charlie Kaufman or, you know, or Richard Curtis or whatever. But the writer of a movie is sort of it's like it's flipped.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's I mean, a lot of the, I think we talked about it a little bit before, but like a lot of the reasons this happened. I mean, you wanted to do directing when you were a kid, didn't you?
Theatre
director.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's kind of amazing that you've gone through stand-up and you've got all this kind of little bits of chance that you were at the right place at the right time.
Definitely.
And something came along, you got in the thick of it because you were in the news quiz and you know, you met people because you were at a certain place at the right time. And so it's incredible that you suddenly find yourself at the Emmys, you know, taking photos. I mean, there's all these photos on Twitter of you with all the cast of the Veep, obviously, and with your Emmys. It's sort of it's unbelievable in a way, isn't
it? It's mental.
I mean, it's great, but
it's absolutely mental. The Emmy that I won, the actual statue. I came home and I and my kids went, show us, and I got it out and I showed it to them and I just put it on the side. And it's just stayed there because I can't think of anywhere that I would put such a thing.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of there on the side. So, and the consequence of that is that sometimes I sort of come in the door and go, fucking ridiculous. This doesn't seem remotely real to me. I mean, but I also, when I went into stand-up, I sort of got distracted into stand-up, and I love stand-up, and it's a brilliant art form and one that I just love to do. But when I did it, I knew that I didn't have any ambition. I didn't calculate it and think, well, this will take me by this clever series of chess moves to the thing that I want to do. I sort of, the odd thing is that because I hadn't always wanted to be a stand-up, I sort of went into it without any particular ambitions or targets or goals. And that meant that I went where opportunity sort of took me. So occasionally people go, try this. And I go, oh, okay, and wander over there, try that. But I did know also that one of the things about stand-up is because you are writing and you're performing, which are two very different talents and disciplines and arts, what have you, you're actually in a position, you can do an awful lot once people are convinced that you've figured out stand-up. You can say, well, I could write you a sitcom, I could, you know, or I can act in a thing, or I can direct a thing. They're much more, it's a really good art form to start with, to convince people that you've got the chops to do other things.
Mm. No, it's interesting. Look, last time you were on, I gave you a hard time about being in adverts.
You did.
But I just want to take a little break to... just been sent this... it's a beer card game from Hip Hops. They're really great. You can find them at www.hiphops.cards.
Explain it to me, Rich.
I will. I've got to see if you like it. So, you get a beer, which I'll give you. I'll give you a free beer.
Thanks,
I haven't got
man.
A bottle opener. It's...
Punk IPA. Brewdog Punk IPA. Postmodern Classic.
Look at that.
Didn't
that's
have to
nice.
Put that on there.
And then it's like top trumps of... I don't fully understand how it works. If you go to their website, there's a very funny video of a man singing a song about it that makes it quite complicated. And you get two cards each.
Right.
Let's see how we go. And then that doesn't look like a real card.
No, this. And I've got one of those. Yeah. What's that? What is that?
Have that one there. And then.
Why does it look like a real card?
Oh, anyway, you play it and it's good. So it's.
Is it just top trumps?
What? It's top trumps. You have to go with the lowest alcohol and then you have to play a higher alcohol and so on.
Right.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's my favourite
game. So it's Chop Chumps.
It's
Chop Chumps with beer.
It's with beer and you drink beer while you do it, and it's my favourite game at the moment. I just thought I'd bring it up apropos of nothing.
Well, I've really enjoyed playing it. It's been really good, and I can see that I would definitely do that.
But Chris Evans, not that one. His kids love playing it, so we're going to send those cards back to him.
That's great. Well, I like it. Are you supposed to win the beer? Why is the beer...
No, I think you just have a drink of beer, and then that makes the boring game quite interesting. Is that another one in there? Is there more cards?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's quite a good box.
It's a nice box. We'll give the box to Andy McCage. Would you like that? Well, there's loads of stuff in there, actually. I'm not giving him that. There's some cocaine in there I didn't know about before.
Okay. So, it's literally just beer Chop Chumps.
Shut up, it's good.
No, I'm just trying to get my head around it.
Yeah, it's Chop Chumps. You play a card, and then you would say you've got to pay one with the same more alcohol, and then you go, all right, I'm going for bitterness.
Brilliant.
And then you've got to find one that's more bitter.
Well, actually, I do much prefer this to, you know, Skylanders Top Trumps or whatever. You know.
So that's www.hiphop.com.
What was the bitterness, by the way? What was your bitterness on there?
What was the what?
What's the bitterness? Tell me the bitterness of your beer.
My bitterness on here is 20.
42.
Well,
I think that's mine.
I don't think it doesn't quite work like that, but it's a good
yes,
game.
It literally works like that. That is exactly how it works.
So but go and buy that. And they've been nice. They've given us some money to make the show, so they're very
good
nice
for them.
People.
And lots of, I'm going to have one of all of them.
You can play it whenever you want. Dean Rutland is the VIP. I'll do get all this out of the way while we can. There's Dean. Have you got a question for Chris you'd like to ask him?
Yeah, can I have the beer? Can you have the beer?
Well, I don't know. That's a licensing question.
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to have bottles in the theatre, so you can have it later.
You really wasted a question. That was a really... I mean,
you could have found
it
out
felt
anything.
Like a good joke at the time.
Dean, you got a free half a bottle of champagne.
Did you?
Agree? Yeah, greedy.
Oh, you don't want to mix
them. Well, when I say free, it was a quarter for you. Well, if you were quick, you could have got more. Bettina looks like she can knock it out. So
did you have a... Do you want a second go at a question? Or?
So I was going to ask a question about community, actually. But
oh, yeah.
He is, yeah, community? I noticed that. I do. I've not seen a lot of it, but I do like it. Yeah. I love Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah,
she's amazing. It would be tricky because I'd have to change my name by default because it is actually called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which makes it him hard to replace.
He's saying if
that's
you could,
very
well,
much why he's
that
done that
people.
Deal.
If you could replace John Oliver in the Last
in
Week Tonight
week.
With
yep.
John Oliver,
it meant that community never existed.
But it meant community never existed.
Would you do it?
Well, that's a tricky one because he's my friend, so I'm not going to replace him. So,
you don't have to kill him, just have to...
Wait, I would literally replace him.
I'm not, you would be
I'm
him.
Like, and... I had my producer head on there going, who am I going to replace him? Oh, I would replace him. Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah. Happy to, at any time. Set me up, call me.
Interesting, you worked with John and Andy Zaltzman.
Yeah, we did the department years ago. Yeah, Radio 4 thing years ago, which... I loved that show. So it was set in a fictional... The department was the fictional organisation that really runs the country, the one that you suspect exists. And we were a research team, Team 32, who had to solve something every week. On my desk by six, would say Keith the Boss, played by Matthew Holness. And we had to solve terrorism or health or crime or whatever. Right, yeah. And it was, looking back on it, it was immense. It's just so dense. It needed a lot more air in it to be actually anything other. It's like a full-on assault of jokes on jokes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's all a bit... It's a bit
well, when
strong.
I occasionally worked with them back, Andy and John, and they would write these very, you know, they were dialogues, but they were very packed things, very densely written.
Yeah, hugely.
But it's kind of interesting, I think, that, I mean, do you think we can do one of these late night shows in the UK? It never seems to work in the UK, and America's got several people doing different versions of the show.
But I
and
think...
could Andy Zaltzman... Why is Andy Zaltzman
Andy
not
could,
doing it?
It could easily do it. We have the people who could do it.
Yeah.
And we have, particularly now, we have an environment in which it could happen, a political environment in which it could happen. But What we don't have is the resources. So, you know, so the way that John's show is organised just as a production is incredible, because on that staff, there are, I think I'm right in saying this, there are more investigative journalists than there are joke writers.
Yeah,
yeah. Right? Because the jokes are covered. He's hilarious. His team are brilliant. But the real meat of it is the stuff that they're bringing to it. The other thing is you need to have somebody who, because John's very lucky in that he's on HBO, right? And HBO, particularly this sort of incarnation of HBO, have just let him let John be John.
Yeah.
So what he's doing there isn't remotely different to what he was doing as a stand-up 15 years. I mean, it's better, and it's better funded. But you know, that's his voice. And when the show first came out, people were going, "Oh, what an innovation! What a great idea to have 12-minute segments on FIFA, you know, to Americans or whatever." But actually, that's John. You know, he wants to go in depth with something, and HBO allow him to do that, and partly that's because they don't have ad breaks, so you can decide how long you want to spend in your 28-minute show doing that without thinking, "Oh Christ, we're going to have to come out." And partly it's just because they are one of those few people who do that brilliant thing of hiring good people and letting them get on with it. And so sometimes HBO things don't quite work, and everyone goes, "Oh, they're in trouble." They're never really in trouble, because they will find something really good, because that's the method that they have. Mm. Find somebody really great, absolutely back them.
Yeah.
And that's what we are missing, I think.
Sure. It's an amazing show. I think it's like one of my favourite.
It's incredible. Yeah. But it is, you know, those things, that's why those things are so personality led. The Daily Show was Jon Stewart, and that's why it's really hard. You know, Trevor Noah's done a brilliant job, actually. People have gone, "Oh, shit. But that's because what they're thinking is, I miss Jon. And you have to allow for an amount of time for that to go away and to get used to his voice and stuff. And he's really finding his feet with that now. And it's partly that he's finding his feet, but equally is that an audience is coming to understand how he talks. And, you know, what's interesting in American late night TV is how much has changed. Really, I mean, Samantha Bee's got a new show. James Corden is there and very quickly hit the ground running. Yeah. You know, Colbert taking over from Letterman. It all changed. I mean, a lot of those people already had that voice in place. Samantha Bee was on The Daily Show. But, you know, and John, I suppose, as well. But, I think, but for Trevor, people hadn't heard him enough. Now they've heard him, and more and more you hear, "Oh, that's really good." Particularly this last week, actually, as he's been taking on Trump, there's been a sense of, "Oh no, he's really good."
But it's interesting. I think in the UK, you would never give anyone that length of time. If someone had a couple of weeks in a new job and they weren't that good, I think someone would panic and get rid of them.
Yeah,
rather than let them. You know, I think that's the thing. Those late night shows, they do 5 shows a week, right?
Yeah. 4, I think.
4.
But that is, I mean, and that in itself is a thing, because, you know, it's like when you start stand up, people often ask, "What's your advice for starting? What's the one piece of advice you would give to anyone starting stand up?" It's a stupid question, because one won't do. But if you can only give one, it's do it over and over and over and over and as often as you possibly can, and it will take ages and ages to find how to do it, find your voice, all of that stuff. And there's no new enterprise, no new artistic enterprise that you can embark upon where that isn't the case. You have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And they do have the space to do that. I mean, eventually, if it isn't working out, you know, Comedy Central would absolutely can Trevor Noah and find somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a brutal business level decision that will be taken by somebody at some stage. But they do at least, you know, give people the time and the space to find out what they're doing and the opportunity as well to do it over and over again. And what happens here as well is that because people are worried about how this is going to work and they don't have, you know, there aren't that many financial resources. It's getting, you know, there's less and less money. Although the papers will try and tell you otherwise, there's less and less money to make TV shows with, because there is more and more TV being made and the butter is being spread thinner. So any TV show that's being tried has, I think, less time now to find its feet. So what tends to happen when we try and make a show like Last Week Tonight or The Daily Show, which we've been trying to make for 20 years, is a channel usually BBC 4 or Channel 4, will commission a run of six, a weekly run of six,
yeah,
and then go, at the end of it. I mean, I'm being slightly unfair because, you know, like Channel 4 backed Stand Up for the Week for a long time and all of those sorts of things. But there's nobody doing it. I mean, since the 11 o'clock show, which was a failed experiment because they sort of didn't have the courage of their convictions, really, and they went for bum jokes very, very quickly.
Mm. Nothing wrong with that?
No, definitely. No, there's no question. Dick jokes are a brilliant form of satire, and then and always have been, but you've got to do some other stuff as well. But what they did do with the 11 o'clock show was they did it three times a week for ages. They really, yeah, really tried. And since then, nobody has really, really tried. And, you know, and that's not to blame any broadcaster for it, because it's hard to find the money to do it. Mm-hmm. But there are people around who could do it. Matt Ford's doing a good, yeah, job. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with Unspun. It, you know, it seems to have started well, and I think, you know, he's exactly the right person to do it. Andy would be a brilliant person to do it. There's definitely the talent there, mm-hmm, but it's just the resources. And writing that stuff's hard because it's quick, isn't it? So that's the whole conceit of As It Occurs to Me.
Yeah,
is this is a high wire act, but that's fine with As It Occurs to Me because it's supposed to be a high wire act. What you don't, you know, when people criticise things like the Now Show, it's really hard to write those things with the available budget and the available time. If you've got a staff of loads of people who are there all week finding the funniest stories, the funniest way of doing those stories, then you will have a bulletproof show. But if you have to assemble your people, you know, the day before,
yeah,
panic read the papers and you know, and you've got to have a version of the script by 6 hours from then, it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Mm. Have you ever been in a canoe?
I don't think I...
No?
No, sorry. Were you hoping for advice?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I thought there'd be an interesting... So I thought that was a great question. If you were God, what flavour would you have made ejaculate? Because it's like God didn't even think that people were going to eat it, isn't it? It's like that was a surprise to him.
Well, it is. I mean, that's really what separates us from the animals. In many respects, is they don't eat their own jizz.
No.
Well, I think one of the benefits of ejaculants being the flavour that it currently is, yeah, you know, it shows a real commitment. You know, you've really got to... Nobody's going, oh, actually, I quite like... You know, it means something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Whereas if it was just chocolate, you'd think, is it me? Or did they just really like chocolate? Is this an act of love or hunger?
So would you say the flavour it is proves there is a God who has thought that far?
No, I wouldn't say that.
No, okay.
I wouldn't say that, but I'd say if God had done it, then, you know, good call, God. You got that one right.
I'd say, I think more salt.
What do you think?
More salt.
I'd
put more salt in it.
More salt, but then it would be followed by tequila.
Yeah, would work.
And lemon juice.
That is good.
Well, that brings me on to my next question.
Three-part cocktail jizz. If you could choose the liquid that you wee...
Right? That I'm totally going on Dragon's Den with that.
Let's do it. Well, we got a lot of Dragon's Den with Will last week, so I think we could do a whole series between us. Have you ever seen... I've never asked this one. Have you ever seen... Have you ever seen a famous TV animal in real life?
Are there any left?
When they were alive, any of the blue
Goldie
Peters?
And Shep and all, yeah, this. Never, no,
Bouncer.
Bouncer's Dream.
Sabrina's Cat from the Sabrina Teenage Witch. Skippy the Bush Kangaroo.
Elephants at Bristol Zoo when, yeah, we were kids would have been quite famous.
Anything on Johnny Morris. Hello, I'm an elephant. Hello, I'm a small animal.
But that is brilliant. But wasn't it brilliant?
It was brilliant.
It was fully great. No, I never have. And now I feel slightly, like, unfulfilled.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a famous... That's a really good question.
No.
My wife once sang... She was once one of the school children who... Remember when they used to open the big studio doors? The Christmas edition of Blue Peter and all the school children would come in, yeah, and sing Christmas carols. My wife was one of those. So I imagine she's seen at least, say, the tortoise.
Yeah, definitely. Probably Shep.
No. Or maybe
Petra.
Yeah, not Petra.
Goldie.
Maybe Goldie. Yeah, I think Goldie. So probably Goldie.
Going a bit old.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not Petra. I think she would have been too small for Shep. Yeah. But I think by sort of singing age, definitely Goldie. Oh. Yeah, she might have seen Goldie. So I've seen a celebrity TV animal in real life in law.
Okay. How do you sleep at night?
I sleep less.
Yeah,
I'm getting older.
I think, well, that definitely is true. And also, you get, well, and kids, but you get less sleep.
Well, my kids are old enough now for that not to be.
Well, I was waking up anyway early before the baby, so I think definitely.
Do you know what? So, the thing that's really thrown me over the years is because I would stay up late, really late. I always think of Gary Bainbridge, brilliant Gary Bainbridge, who's on Twitter, you should follow him, who tweeted once. I think of this every night. He tweeted once, "I want to go to bed, but I can't face the admin." And when you're on the sofa and you think, "Oh God, I'd have to clean my teeth." You have to do it then eventually, but you do. But I'm partly one of those people. I used to do sort of really good work between about midnight and two.
Yeah.
And it's been very difficult since having kids that I can't really work in that time. But there's still some part of me that wants me to stay up that late. But then, as you say, you have to get up and take them to school.
Yeah. I found there was a week where I got back into that. It was when we got back. You might have this with, if you've been travelling a lot. We were jet lagged, so I wasn't sleeping very well anyway. But also, my daughter was sleeping better because of the jet lag. It confused her. But I was awake between like 12 and 2 and then having millions of ideas so I couldn't sleep, which used to happen to me a lot when I was young.
Yeah, that's a killer.
But it's kind of, it was exciting because I was formulating film scripts in my head in the middle of the night, which is, unusual.
It's good. I think it's a really creative time, and I think it's partly because your brain, you don't have anything else going on. That's why I often find I have really good ideas, or a problem, if there's a problem in the script or something that I'm having trouble with and I'm staring at it on the screen, what I actually should do is go and clean my teeth, because I find myself, when I clean my teeth, it's just some weird sort of empty motor action. So it clears your brain, and you go, oh, I know what it is. Lots of my best ideas come when I'm just in the shower
Just stay in the shower.
Stay in the shower all day.
Just don't write on paper. Well, don't write on anything. You have to get some crayons that you can write on
shower. So soap crayons.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it was good. It's nice, isn't it? It's got to a nice, calm... Can you listen to that?
They're just waiting for you to dismiss them.
I know. They're wondering how long can this go on. Yeah. I don't think I ever
it's
discussed...
It's hot in here, isn't it?
I don't think... It is hot, but it's all right. We don't have to worry about them. I don't think I've discussed this with you before, because I don't think this was... I was so obsessed. But do you consider having sex with a robot as cheating in a relationship?
Wow!
If you had to have sex with a very, a very realistic robot, or just any robot you fancied, would you feel you betrayed the marriage vows that you?
All right,
taken?
So let's build up to this.
Okay.
So imagine the fabulous torch masturbation aid combo, the Fleshlight.
Yes.
It looks like a vagina in a can. I'm a serial killer. So is that cheating?
I would say no. I've made a very similar, and women use a vibrator, which is a robot.
Okay,
penis.
And that's the thing. So you attach, say, the vibrator or the thing, Fleshlight, to a shop mannequin.
Yeah,
is that cheating?
Definitely not,
because
I don't want it to
so
be.
So now, because you are,
because I don't want it to be.
Okay, I got it. So now the mannequin.
You don't have to convince me. I don't think it's cheating.
You don't think it's cheating? I don't. I mean, it sort of depends. Like, have you seen?
Would your wife be upset if you came home and said, "I've just had sex with a robot that looks like the actress Gemma Chan, but it wasn't"?
Well,
a person.
Think at that point you have to say, "Take the skin off." Yeah. My wife's home. Take the skin off, and then she's beep beep beep. She's just all the leaping circuits underneath, and then it's slightly different.
That's all.
Hello,
right,
darling. I've just been practicing a little with my machine. You could say.
Yeah.
Well, have you seen Ex Machina, the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
See,
of course, I've seen all the
very...
films about having sex with robots. Because at the moment, that's all I've got.
Because you do think, well, now that's a robot that I really fancy, so maybe that would be cheating. And then you go, actually, no, I don't fancy a robot. I fancy Alicia Vikander. That's what actually that is.
Have you seen Westworld? The TV series.
The group. Do you mean the video for Sonic Boom Boy?
The new...
One for the teenagers.
The new TV series
Boom.
About...
A Boom Boy.
About a tourist attraction that is... There was a film of it as with Yul Brynner many years ago.
There was.
But this is a more...
And there's a Stephen Malkmus song that mentions it.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Is it any good? Does it involve
I think it's
robot
interesting. It's a bit slow. Sex. It's about... Well, it's about a world you go to and act out you're a cowboy and you can do whatever you want there, so you can be a good person, you can be a bad person. I think what's quite interesting... Do you think if there... So, like, there's a guy who's going around doing awful... You know, a lot of people go there and do awful things, like kill lots of robots and rape robots and are horrible. Do you think if there was that place... This is a very serious question about sex with robots. Do you think that that would discourage people to do that in real life or make them more likely to do it in real life? So if there was a world where you could go and do disgusting things like as a tourist attraction... Which
so it's a sex tourism.
Well, sex tourism, murder tourism. So, like, you could go... People are just going and shooting robots. They get all the thrill of shooting someone dead, but they haven't killed anyone.
Well,
would it make them more likely to kill people in real life or would it make them less likely to kill people?
I think it would... It's like, you know, there's an assumption that Grand Theft Auto and things like that do lead people to be violent and so on. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea to be able to shoot something that looks and acts like a human or, you know, perform any other unspeakable act on that. That's not a good thing to have in your head, Rich. I'm really sorry if this isn't the answer you were looking for.
No, it is the answer. I want to
see it. No, it isn't the answer you were looking for. Please let me murder them. Let me murder them and touch them. I want to touch and murder them. Please, please, please. That's what you're thinking.
I don't really want... I think having sex with a robot would be odd.
So I recorded 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown the other day. And Joe Wilkinson, brilliant, brilliant, love that man, brought along as his mascot a sex doll. But not like a blow up sex doll, like something I know, like a posable. She weighed pretty heavy. She weighed like a human weight of and you could pose her, and it was and underneath you could feel a hard metal skeleton, but there was a sort of spongy, rubbery, skin, muscly arrangement outside. You're smiling at me slightly, worrying, Google kind of a way, and. And she was, she was anatomically available. And it looked like one of the most horrifying things you could ever do.
Yeah.
Just in terms of your own sanity.
Do you think you'd be halfway through and go, what am I doing?
Well, if you were halfway through, then the question is, what then?
I think you're tired.
Halfway through, because the what you'd have to go through to get yourself to that situation is remarkable. Also, I just like the fact that nobody really wants to go and get one. You're going to have that delivered. And there's only so... You know, I hope that they say, comes in brown paper packaging, but it's all just wrapped around that looks like a girl.
All right. No, fair. Is sex with a ghost cheating, though?
That doesn't count because they don't exist, so it's irrelevant. And also, I mean, how would that work? Because they're non-corporeal.
Well,
so,
how
would the purchase work in that situation? Where's the stimulation coming from?
I have given some answers to this question at some length.
Oh, well, then I apologise to everybody here for taking them through this again.
Have you ever lived in an igloo, really, though?
No, but I have been in a canoe.
Oh, you have been in a canoe.
I moved out of the igloo because I couldn't fit the canoe through the door. And then after I'd left, I realised I could have just turned it round and done it point first.
Well, it is very hot, and we're both retired old men. We talked for 1 hour 40 last time we talked.
Yeah,
and I'm tempted to go and beat the record.
Oh, fuck's sake. None of these people need that.
They can leave at any time.
They've got lives, they've got jobs.
They can leave at any time. They love it. That's the biggest laugh of the
year. Yeah, that is a bit, yeah. Richard Herring's Leicester Square hostage situation.
Let's just quickly talk about...
I wonder how many people have been on Twitter going, fucking hell, please come and rescue me.
You were in an opera, weren't you?
I was in an opera. I was back at the Opera House today.
Were you?
Yeah, watching the general rehearsal for Shostakovich's The Nose. It's fucking amazing. You have to go and see it. You're not going to come out whistling any tunes, let me tell you that. It's pretty hard on the old ears. But fucking hell, you will come out going, I don't know what I just saw. It's incredible. Yeah, so but they're live streaming it, so I'm going to present their coverage for that. But it is it's like there's proper clowning, and it's the only time I've ever heard a man in an opera like singing "Fuck it." It was really good. Really good. I thoroughly recommend it.
Isn't opera all shit though?
No. I mean, I think my last, that's why I said preceding your question, yeah, which you wanted to ask, and so asked in any case, really went to answer the point before we got to it. No. Opera's great. Opera's really, really good. And it runs, it can be funny, it can be tragic, it can be everything in between. I've seen fantastic things. I've seen terrible things. I've seen fantastic things. And doing an opera, being in an opera, that's one of the best things I've ever done.
So you were in L'Étoile?
L'Étoile by Emmanuel Chaprey. Oui.
But you weren't, so you were not, you were
no.
a speaking role.
Oui, I was a speaking role. There's quite a lot of those in opera.
Right.
And more than you think. And so I played the part of Smith, an Englishman, and my friend Jean-Luc Vincent, a very brilliant French actor and comedian, played Dupont. We were there really as a sort of framing device for this. It's a fucking lunatic opera, and it was written. It's a very light opera from 19th century. It's about a mad king who is wandering around looking for somebody to impale as a birthday treat for himself. And the whole thing, and it involves a giant elephant, and it's mental. The whole thing is lunacy. So Marianne Clément, who's the director, sort of wanted to have some people reacting to it like it's lunacy. So she created these two characters, Smith and Dupont, who sort of start outside the opera and end up inside the opera. And it was great fun because I am an opera goer. That is the thing that I do. I do go a couple of times a year, mm-hmm. and have done for a very long time. And so it was just to be on the stage at Covent Garden was unbelievable as an opera geek, but just also as a piece of performance, it was fun, and it was sort of changing all of the or finding different things out about comic performance, because you're that household's maybe, I don't know, it's 2,500 people or whatever, and it's big, and everybody's doing that, you have to go big, you have to go against all of your sort of instincts as a comic performer. You know what we use is we use the mic in a large space to try and allow ourselves to be as small as possible when we need to be, because that's often where things are funny. And I've spent years on Veep and Thick of It and what have you, trying to get out of myself and others small reactions. You need to go little. You're constantly saying to people, just can we have a smaller one? Tony Hale's funny about that, because I would go in and go, Tony, he goes smaller, because he has a tendency to go to but everybody does, everybody has a tendency to go big. And so it was really odd to sort of write these comic lines and find that you were having to do them in a proper kind of pantomime, right out to the back sort of a way. But it was the most fun, and it annoyed a lot of opera snobs too, which was great.
What are the opera singers like backstage? Are they a crazy bunch, or are they?
They're lovely. Some of them are loonies, yeah, and some of them are fantastic. And again, they're sort of like any other performers. And they're like comedians in that. So there are some comedians you meet and you think, "Fuck, calm down." And there are other comedians who you think, "Oh, great, I'm glad they're on the bill." So they run the gamut, but they're all really great fundamentally. And what's so extraordinary about them though is how relaxed they are. That's the thing, is you'll be talking to somebody and they'll be going, fucking hell, I tell you what. And they'll be, I don't know where we are with this, Brexit, what the fuck is going to happen with Brexit? That is, oh, hang on, that's me. They go on and they do an aria and they come back and go, sorry, what were we saying? And the aria, they'll do like a death aria. They'll be there, yeah, thinking, it's this incredible, huge emotional moment that the audience are gripped by, and they've just been talking about, should we get chips? Do you want to get chips after? And they come back out and carry on the conversation about what sauce you might have. It's brilliant. It is great, and it's bustling. I've never been anywhere busier. Also, the Opera House itself is one of the busiest places I've ever been in my life, because at any one time there are like three operas that are running, and there are two or three that are in rehearsal, and there's the ballet school as well. So and the Royal Ballet is there, plus the ballet school. There are these extraordinary sort of 20-something men and women walking around like gazelles, like this, these ballet dancers, and the opera singers who are these schlubby fuckers going about. It's extraordinary, this sort of conference of people. And
And so there's this tannoy system that is constantly going, saying, ladies and gentlemen of L'Etoile, this is your five-minute call for this afternoon's rehearsal. 5 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, for opera rehearsal room two. And that, and there's all that myth d'espoir, could you please come to, or whatever. And this just goes constant. And you'll hear one of those, but it's not just them who use the tannoy. So you'll hear, it's also the technicians. So you hear people going, ladies and gentlemen of the Ariadne of Naxos cast, could we please have you front of stage for the chair rehearsal? That's the Ariadne of Naxos cast. Thank you very much. And then there's a break of about 2 seconds, and someone goes, Dave, can you come into the back? Switch the lights on. Cheers, yeah. It's fucking great. Dave to the back, lights. Dave! Well, it's been lovely to see you again, Chris. I think we probably should wrap it up. Just one more thing. Was it you who broke that cupboard in the...
It was me, and I do it again.
I'm Columboing you.
Did you just talk to Richard Thomas?
Just one more thing.
Just one more thing. Was it Richard Thomas?
I haven't had Richard Thomas on.
Until you have Richard on, we will never truly know the full story of this. If he's anything about him, he'll have totally fucking forgotten the entire incident.
Which is what you would hope.
At this stage. Where, I will never years forget. Later, 14 years now.
We'll get to the bottom of it.
14 years since that one cupboard was broken and subsequently repaired with no real damage to anything. About a day later by a man. This really shouldn't be ringing. This is not a cold case. This isn't one, you know.
I'm not going to go to my grave.
This isn't one of those things that should be on the front page of the Express every time they can't think of something about Princess Diana or global warming.
But, you know, it starts, people start by breaking cupboards and then they go
and
on.
And then where does it go?
Breaking wardrobes, sawing up tables.
Sawing up tables.
Well, burning chairs.
Well, I swear to you. I mean, I would let it go at this point. I just think it's better for you if you.
But wouldn't the person who did it say that? That is what I'm saying.
What you should do is you should. I mean, it's too late for me. You have to. But what you should do is you should get Stew on.
Yeah.
If you could bear it. And. Richard Thomas and Antipolsky, right, and just put a cupboard there. And then ask them provoking questions, not about the cupboard, and see which one lashes out, and then you've got your man.
Okay.
And if none of them do it, it was you.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming back.
They don't know what you were talking about.
I know they
about.
Don't, but the people at home do. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Anderson, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. You have been listening to the Richard Harris Square Theatre Podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Chris Addison. The music, as always, is played by Pest. They come in every day to do it live. They're nice guys. Thank you to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. Thank you to everyone at YouTube. Thank you to everyone at iTunes. Thank you to everyone at Vimeo. And thank you to Go Past the Stripe as well. They're quite nice. The producer is Ben Walker. He's a decent guy. He's all right. It is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. Thanks for listening to these. If you've enjoyed them, why not come and see me on tour in 2017? You might be able to see me in 2016 in Bridgewater doing the best, but all the most of the gigs are in the new year. Go to richardherring.com/gigs or richardherring.com/the_best/tour and you can see all of the tour dates and see if I'm coming to near you. Please come along. That's how I make my living. Thanks, bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.